Welcome to this week's episode of Real Estate Served on the Rocks. On this week's episode, the guys sit down with Jordan Kiefer, the owner of Rocky Mountain Steel Piering, one of the top companies in foundation and structural repair across all of Denver Metro, to break down everything you need to know about your home's foundation as a homeowner. Guys also have a second special guest on today's episode, Jordan Ortega, another top producing real estate agent in Denver, Colorado, all while sipping on Whistle Pig, Pickleback, Single Barrel, Rye Whiskey.
What is happening, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of Real Estate Served on the Rocks, powered by Living in Colorado, the Mile High Perspective. And with me, as always, I have
Oscar Ibarra.
And I am Jameson Amoros. We have some cool representatives today and a couple of special guests, if you guys are watching the show. To my left, I have Jason Kiefer from Rocky Mountain Steel Piering. And they basically give me a rundown of what you guys do.
Yeah, foundation repair and structural support.
That is very important when it comes to real estate. I also have Jordan Ortega from RE/MAX and the Griffith Home Team with us today. Jordan, tell me a little bit about yourself, man.
Yeah, so I've been doing real estate for about 6 years now. I really do a lot with new construction, and I really pride myself with my first-time home buyers, which I just think that, you know, helping out when people need it the most is, you know, pretty important for me. So that's where I get a lot of satisfaction, is helping those first-time home buyers and new construction stuff. So
yeah, man. No, I think and it's cool because, you know, we have a couple of first-time home buyer, I would say, you know, expert here with Jordan, and we've got Jason to talk to us today because we all know, and Oscar, you can attest to this, that first-time home buyers get a little jumpy when it comes to buying houses, and there's some things that can show up as you walk through a home that can be very scary. So
absolutely, and piggyback on that. I think the foundation is not just for some home buyers. It is scary even to us. I mean, 20 years in, I see foundation issues and I'm like, whoa, all right, we need to bring in the experts. It's no nonsense, because it could be very expensive, like we were talking earlier, but you have the right people, maybe
yep.
not.
Yeah, so today, on today's episode, what we want to do for you guys is we want to walk through the different things to look for from a foundation standpoint. We want to kind of take the big scary, and hopefully, you know, with Jason's help, with Jordan's help, and with our experience combined, make it, I don't know, just less scary, right? Give you guys some things to look for. You know, preventative maintenance, we'll talk about a lot. We'll talk about some of the big risks. We'll talk about cost. And that way, as you guys are walking through homes, you know, kind of looking at, you know, just some different things that are standing out. Cracks, foundation shifts, heaving. We want to kind of peel the veil back and let you guys kind of walk through those homes with confidence, and give you guys a resource in Jason and his company as well in Colorado here. You can reach out too. So that being said, if you guys are fans of the show, you know that not only do we talk real estate and we help you guys, but, and you guys are brand new, yes, we sir. Drink bourbon.
Yes.
It might hurt a little bit today for Oscar and I.
Yeah, we kind of, I'm going to blame Wardell.
Yeah, Wardell, Stephen Curry. Yeah, we'll put it this way. We had some 20-year Pappy last night, and Oscar doesn't remember tasting it necessarily.
We needed to go home after the game.
So we should have gone home, Jameson, but we didn't. And you know what? We're here.
Fortunately and unfortunately, Jameson made friends with a bartender that has a pretty cool bar downtown.
Yes. And shout out nearby bar.
Yes.
By the way. If you guys are
very,
on
very
20th and Flat, you should check it out.
To show us a bunch of bourbons. But at that point, I had a few bourbons because we were at the Nuggets game, and I don't remember. He might have, he could have just gave me some Jack Daniels,
have,
yeah. and I would have been
no,
like,
no, I saw the bottle. Have you guys been there?
No, I know. I'm sure it was.
No, never been.
I don't. I feel bad, is what I'm saying.
I feel great.
I feel bad because I don't remember the Pappy.
I know. It was good, though.
How do you not remember the Pappy? Come on. You can't disrespect Pappies like that.
I know. I was overserved.
Okay. You were not overserved.
Probably mixing your Pappies with Coke while you're at it.
Hey, but you know what? We're responsible. We Ubered home. We made it home. It was good.
Yep,
you know?
It was fine.
It was fine.
And the Nuggets won.
And the Nuggets won.
You forgot the best part.
It was a great game. He was calm. He was like, it's going to be a buzzer beater. It was close.
I thought I was going to be on a heater.
It was back.
So, yeah, I apologize for my voice today if it's not as, you know.
Yeah, if we're not as live.
Yeah, we're not as loud. That's why.
It was a good night last night. It was, you know. It was fine.
But hey, so as I said, we are here at the behest of the Rouge.
Hey, and where's Charlie? If for those of you that are watching, Charlie's
Charlie's going back to his producer role today. So he's behind the scenes.
Love you, Charlie. I miss you.
But he's still here, so don't worry. He hasn't gone anywhere. And as always, we are sponsored by the Rouge Wine and Bourbon Bistro.
Yes.
We're here right off of Arapahoe Road and I-25. If you guys haven't been to the spot and you guys are bourbon heads or just like fine cocktails,
wine,
great ambiance,
yes,
great food, please come check it out. They're open every day at 2 p.m. They've got special events that they host every other weekend, bourbon tastings. And as always, we're super blessed to be able to be here. And
yeah, their brunch is great.
I'll just chime
in here. I'm a big bourbon lover. I've been to a lot of different bourbon bars, and this is my only second time here, but I got to say, it's one of the cleanest, more fun ambiances. And I got to say, their bourbon selection's out of
this
world.
It's out of this world, man.
Definitely a thumbs up for these folks, and appreciate you for having us here today.
Jason, beautiful. Are you a bourbon guy?
Absolutely.
See?
And the wine wall is impeccable.
The wine wall, right?
Man, oh, man. He showed us around, and the ambiance. It's a nice establishment.
It is, man. It's great.
They've done it. It's very tasty.
It's kind of a little hidden gem.
It is a hidden gem.
We got to make it unhidden. You guys need to come down.
We have to discover it. So that being said, as always, while we go through this discussion, and it is a scary discussion, so I think it's fitting that we're tasting some bourbon today, right? We have a Whistle Pig Piggyback. Thank you, Oscar. Single barrel, aged 6 years. And this is brand new from Whistle Pig. It just came out this year. So it's a brand new release. None of us have had it yet, so we're excited to kind of taste it and to kind of give you guys a rundown. You know, we'll give you guys our first thoughts on the bourbon. We'll go into our topic with Jason and Rocky Mountain Steel Peering and talk through it. And at the end, as always, we will give you guys our honest review. And I'm excited to have these gentlemen here because it's nice to have some new blood.
Now we're new blood over here. You know what I'm saying? As a realtor, it is always comforting, if you will, to have structural people around.
Hell yeah.
Just because we're not engineers.
To piggyback off that,
we're going
to
use that all day.
Piggyback. Anyways, I took it one step further. He's my neighbor four houses down, so I got the help right next door.
Jason.
That's right. We're all in Crystal Valley in this crew right now.
Yeah, we won't be leaking any addresses just to make sure that you guys don't get bugged too much. But
that's all you get.
We're neighbors, man.
Yeah, but at the end, we'll have Jason give you guys his contact information as well. And I mean, he's been fantastic just being able to go out, and we'll talk a little bit more about his ability to go out and at least give, you know, a professional opinion before something horrible happens. But that being said, Jason, if you want to just kind of run through Rocky Mountain Steel Peering's history, how you guys were formed, what you guys do, and while you do that, introduce yourself and the company, I will pour us our first sips of this bourbon.
Absolutely.
Alrighty.
Excellent. Absolutely. So we were the conception date of 1996. My dad started this company after working for a geotechnical firm. And we started with the goal of moral and ethical obligations in the foundation repair and helical pier industry. So we've been rock and rolling ever since. And it's been a great, great trip, great adventure. I came back here after living outside in Virginia. I was a deputy sheriff over there for a handful of years. And came back here and started to work with him a little bit more and try to change the world. And that was when a bunch of these other companies started to change their marketing tactics and how they conducted themselves in business.
So you were a deputy sheriff, huh?
I was a patrol deputy sheriff outside of D.C.
How'd you like that? Outside of D.C.?
It was an adventure.
Yeah, I was going
to
say.
Yeah. You learn a lot. You learn how to treat people. You learn how to communicate.
I was going to say, what's the Dave Chappelle? D.C.'s a rough city, man.
Yeah. It's a rough city, man.
No,
it is.
One of my really good friends, he's like a brother. He's a cop over in Castle Rock. He just moved over from Houston. Moved him down here. And
thank you.
I have a lot of my family are law enforcement.
It was a great step in life. It taught me a lot. It educated me and helped me grow into a better person. Then once I got married, we decided we were going to have kids. I needed to figure out a better next step.
Yeah.
So. And you know, not to get too weird about it.
But you're about to.
He's going to do it anyways,
right? I'm going to do it anyways because that's what I do. Regardless of how you feel about law enforcement, because most people, cops and other people, they're still, you know, someone's family member.
Absolutely.
Someone's wife, someone's husband, someone's brother, someone's sister. And they go out there and, you know, they lay their life on the line to, you know, make sure we're okay. Yep. But they're still human beings, and that's kind of where I've always stood, because they're family to me. I mean, they're my family members, right? And I'm like, I just stay quiet sometimes because people sometimes don't like law enforcement. But, you know, at the end of the day, there's bad apples like in everything. So I get it. So,
yeah, absolutely.
I get
absolutely.
It.
It's awesome. And then again, to my right, Jordan Ortega from Remax.
Cheers.
So Jordan, give me a quick rundown, man. What's your background? How long have you been in the business? What brought you into the business?
Yeah, so definitely been a part of the retail life, and that's been a big part of my
amen, you know, brother.
you know, the Best Buy thing, AT&T, you know, always in leadership type roles. And I got to be honest, I absolutely loved it. I learned a lot about, you know, negotiations, just, you know, how to be there to guide your people through, whether it be a purchase and now a house even, mm-hmm. at this point.
Yep.
And I think I took a lot of those skill sets and was able to translate that into real estate and really hit the ground running. So
awesome.
That was really cool for me. But yeah, now I've been, like I said, real estate for about 6 years. Mm-hmm. I've helped out hundreds of people at this point. And I think my first 2 years were essentially all first-time home buyers. It's really tough when you first start out to, hey, I want to sell your million-dollar home. Like, I can be eager and excited, but the experience is key.
Yeah.
And I think working with the first-time home buyers has really gotten me through a point where, heck, there's nothing that really scares me. I'm basically ready for all the challenges. Definitely was a first time with the structural repair and things. Yeah. I didn't even know anything about a home at that point. So really, I really dove deep into my partnerships, including Jason Kiefer and his company, to not only educate me, just to make things a little bit, make more sense of mm-hmm. why things do the things they do. And how, like, a house is always probably going to move. We're on concrete and we're on soils, you know, things happen. And it's just really good to have a better understanding, education piece on that to help out my clients.
So. Awesome, man. We're excited to have you guys here.
First time home buyers is great because it's longevity, because first time home,
that's right.
They're going to call you, you know, sell their next home.
That's right.
So it's always, I did a lot of first time home buyers and I enjoyed it a lot too. I agree with that.
They're a skittish bunch. I will tell you that much. So it's good to have, like Jordan said, though, it's good to have those partnerships to lean on and say, hey, here's the deal.
Obviously, you two know each other for a while.
I mean, a little bit.
Am I the only one out of, like, all of your groups that didn't work at Best Buy?
Probably.
Yeah, I think so.
Every time I'm there, I'm like, you two?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, dude.
Everybody came from Best Buy.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, it's the foundation. Yeah. of our careers. But no, we're excited to have both of you gentlemen here. And I'm excited to get you guys' opinions on this. So to give you guys, since you're first timers, we want to kind of sniff it. I want to get you guys' thoughts on you know, the palate that you're sensing. We'll take some sips. We'll sip it through the podcast. And at the very end, for those of you guys that aren't familiar, we'll give it a rock rating, which essentially we rate the bourbon from 1 rock to 10 rock. Mm-hmm. 1 rock being the best, 10 rocks being the worst, because the more ice you put in a bourbon, usually the shittier it
makes
is.
Makes sense. Yep.
That being said, Whistle Pig, single barrel, piggyback.
Okay.
Aged 6 years in new American oak barrels, as well as oath barrels, which are gin barrels from Finland. So I feel like it's going to be interesting. I'm going to get my nose. Let me know what you guys think.
The smell immediately slaps you in the face.
It's very unique.
I think it's that gin.
The smell took me back to last night.
Yeah.
A little bit. What a Nuggets win.
A little bit. Yeah, it's
what's the proof?
100.
Oh, 100 wow. proof?
Yeah. Heavy on the wood, for
it
sure.
It is very heavy on the oak. But I get that gin, like that.
The gin slapping me like right in the right face the right end. Now.
Like, it's almost, that's what I, yeah, it's almost like a single malt smell.
I could see that.
I mean, it's very spicy.
Spicy and floral, but like,
kind of like juniper berry kind of.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. So I see where they're coming with the gin, and again, it's.
I've actually never had anything aged in gin barrels.
Neither have I.
Pretty unique for me.
Neither have I.
I'm like a weeded bourbon type of guy, but this really
smells very different than different than any bourbon I've. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and I don't. Ooh, I mean,
it's pretty smooth, actually.
It's not cheap. So, you know, I've only bought maybe one or two bottles, so I don't really know Whistle Pig at all. Mm. So I'll be interested to see.
Right, well, cheers, gentlemen. Let's
cheers.
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 Appreciate you
Take
guys.
Take back to last night. There you go.
Let's get a taste. Yeah, right. Transported me to 8 hours ago.
Well, we're bouncing all over the place. I think we need Charlie back. But Charlie's in the background toasting with us as well.
That's really good.
That's smooth.
It was actually a lot more smooth than I expected for my first sip, to be honest.
That is, I mean, and the burn's very forward.
Right.
But it's a rye, so.
But it's a rye.
You get a lot of spices, for sure.
It lays on the tongue, spicy.
A little sour, right? Kind of like a sour
maybe,
mash?
Maybe in the back end?
On the back end?
Maybe. Yeah.
And it might be my coffee might be throwing me off, but I don't have a lot of sour.
Man, I do. But again, last night was a long night, so.
What do you think, Jason?
I think it's got a good taste to it. Yeah. It's a lot smoother than you would expect.
I didn't think it was going to be as smooth or easy drinking as it. Yeah, I agree.
The aging
first thing.
Process has definitely tamed it a little bit, but it's got a nice smooth body to it. It's good.
Hmm. Oscar, what are your thoughts? Your initial thoughts?
It's not as spicy as I thought it was going to be because it's a rye. It has a lot of like fruit notes.
It does,
fruit
right?
Forward.
Yeah.
I want to say,
what are you getting out of it?
I'm going to say the same thing. Like it reminds me a little bit like scotch where it's a little floral, right? Mm-hmm. And a little bit light, easy drinking, but still that gin and you get that little spicy hug at the end. It's pretty good.
Yeah. The nose is throwing me off. Mm-hmm. Charlie, what are your thoughts?
The front
man behind the camera. Right?
A little chocolate.
Chocolate.
Let me give another hit on that.
Did the nose throw you off though too? Like completely different.
Way different.
Way
the
different
profile on it.
The gin. Yeah.
Yeah, gin, sweet oak.
Yes, that's right. It's like a tart, sour, yeah.
As soon as he said the chocolate, I saw that immediately.
At the end, right?
Yeah, at the very end, so. Yes.
Awesome.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Well, I'm excited to have this open up.
Excellent. So, yeah, very good.
And as you guys know, every episode, you guys will see a glass in front of us. It's JC's glass. Fun fact, JC is actually Jordan's brother.
Cheers to JC.
When Oscar asked how long I've known Jordan, it's been a while, right? I think I've known you since you were like 10.
You were knee high to grass. So
they were teaching me, you know, things a bit earlier than maybe I should have seen or done.
We taught him a lot.
Maybe a couple beer pong games when I was 14, who knows? Always a good time.
Yeah, so we'll let his glass open up and we leave it open on purpose because, you know, if you guys are bourbon connoisseurs, you know that one of the reasons we use these Glencairns is because you want it to open up and we want to see how it transforms between now and the end of the episode. Because what ends up happening is we'll have one or two of these and then we'll take a sip of that and it's like,
if it's
a good bourbon, it's a completely different bourbon. Right. So. Yeah.
Typically the burn goes away and sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah.
We're surprised. Yeah. It's a cool evolution of the bourbon.
Awesome. All right. So today, structure of the episode wise, guys, what we want to do is we kind of want to take you through obviously the importance of foundation, which is why we have Mr. Kiefer here. And we want to break it up and kind of look at it from a seller's perspective. If you're looking at selling your house, the things to look at pre-listing to make sure that you can get the most amount of money for your home, to address any concerns, anything like that. We're going to look at it from a buyer's standpoint as well to just kind of walk, especially like Jordan said, first-time home buyers, right? To make sure that when you see things, it's not the end of the world. And we're gonna give you guys some tips about how it may, you know, increase property values, ROI on certain repairs, because we talk about it a lot. Like, hey, is it worth it to, you know, repair something before it becomes an issue? Or is it not really big of an issue and it might be a waste of money? Because at the end of the day, we want to make sure you guys aren't spending your hard-earned money where you don't need to.
Preventative maintenance, we were talking about that earlier, and something that is very inexpensive and people overlook is negative drainage.
100%. You're
just putting some dirt up against your house, and then I'll let you take it from there. You're the expert there.
Yeah.
Yeah, preventative maintenance is the most cost-effective and high-producing addition that you can do to your home. And there's a variety of different things in preventative maintenance that can help you, too. It's as simple as cleaning out your gutters.
Yeah.
Adding downspout extensions, ensuring that you don't have standing water within 10 feet of the foundation. Simple things like that. Dirt wedges, positive drainage away from the foundation, preferably to 10 feet plus away from the foundation. That way you don't have saturated soils in that area. If you have flat lots, drainage, French drains, different types of avenues that you can pursue in order to get that water away as soon as possible. Making sure you don't have snowdrift buildup. Other avenues that we've seen a lot of issues with was large trees close to the foundation too.
Roots
will cause issues. They will find a way, just like water. Water always finds a way.
Yeah.
So whatever you can do to get that water away, there's many things you can do as a homeowner. Maintenance tips on sprinkler blowouts. water spigots, making sure they're not leaking, sewer drains, sewer lines, main water lines, small things like that. Just making sure that you take care of your home and button up those small things when seasons change can save you a lot of headache.
Yeah. When you say keep the water away, what would you say, like, distance wise in a measurement from the house, how far would you like to keep that, you know, at least away from the foundation?
Yeah, a lot of times 10 feet seems to be an industry standard.
10 feet.
Okay. If you can get water 10 feet away, you stand a good chance.
Is that like a builder code, or is that just industry standard? Or
How would you achieve that? Because in my mind, I'm thinking I need some gutter extensions that are like 15 feet long. I mean, how does that work?
Right? Just get longer. Do I have to? Yeah, Oscar way, get a longer extension.
Oscar's out there building a water slide for the roof.
Damn. Man. What does that look like?
So there's lots of different ways to do it. A lot of those downspout extensions, the hard side downspout extensions you get from Home Depot, $5-$10. You attach them to your downspouts and you're on your way. And it can save you a lot of money. Drains, French drains. Having a landscaper do a dirt wedge if you have a very flat lot. And a dirt wedge can be something as simple as a 30 degree angled wedge, encouraging water to get away. Mm-hmm. One thing that I have preached often with real estate agents and their clients is landscaping fabric. I hate it because it's a permeable substance. Mm-hmm. I like 6 mil plastic. So if I'm doing any landscaping or regrading of a project underneath mulch, rock, whatever it ends up being, we pull landscape fabric out. We install a 6 mil or above plastic because it's a non-permeable substance. Water doesn't even stand a chance on soaking into the soils.
Neither do weeds.
Exactly. It's a very weed-ridden substance.
Yeah. Now, is that more expensive, though?
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. But for preventative maintenance reasons, it helps save you a lot of money.
That makes sense.
And it doesn't allow a chance for water to percolate into the soils.
And when you say French drain, two things. One, for the viewers, what is a French drain? And two, that sounds expensive.
Is it a drain that just has a weird accent?
No, like I think champagne? It's eating a croissant.
A croissant?
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, so you have many different types of drains. You have above ground drains. You have culverts. You have French drains, which is a subterranean drain. More often than not, a French drain encapsulates a 4 to 6 mil drain with rock around it to allow for the water to migrate into the drain in a way.
Got it.
A pipe, right. So
a pipe, exactly. And sometimes, depending upon the design of the drain, it'll look like a dry rock riverbed. Mm-hmm. You can make this an aesthetically pleasing part of your property while also very purposeful.
Got it.
Mm. Other times, it's underneath landscaping and grass.
Yeah.
Which just pop-ups and grates.
How far below ground do they typically have to dig down if they're going to go underneath or something?
If the drain is installed properly with the right grading to it, normally you'll stop 12 inches down and progress at about 2 degrees for every 10 feet.
Gotcha.
So that being said, so preventive maintenance, obviously very, very important, right?
Critical.
But if I'm a homeowner, I am a homeowner, by the way, as I believe all of us are here. What are some signs as a homeowner or a potential seller listing the house? What are some signs to look for that would showcase potential water intrusion, right? Because in my mind, I look at it and go, okay, I have, you know, obviously if I'm buying a house, the grading should be there based on what the plat map
builder
says
code.
And the building code. Yep. But if I'm a seller and I'm looking at potentially listing my home, what are some more of the obvious things you would look for to say, hey, you know what, you may have some water intrusion into the foundation that could potentially cause issues?
Yeah, there's water intrusion and then there's movement signs.
Okay.
So we'll just kind of address
sure,
all of them.
Absolutely.
In terms of water intrusion, what you'll more often than not see is obviously wet carpets, wet walls, wet drywall, wet insulation. Shows water's been there. If water has been there but is no longer working its way in, you'll see efflorescence.
Okay.
Efflorescence is a white mineral deposit. Kind of looks like snow on your wall. And because of the hard waters in Colorado, efflorescence is left behind once water dries. Efflorescence isn't really a datable substance, so you can't tell how long it's been there, how much. But you know that water was present there. You'll see that normally around cracks that have water migration or between slabs and foundation walls.
Okay.
You'll know that water's been there at some point. And that usually is a good identifier that regrading or improvement of grading needs to be done in that area.
Okay.
And in terms of movement of the foundations, it's the big ones. Doors and windows opening and closing properly are sticking. Or ghost doors, they open by themselves. They don't maintain their position. Cracks in drywall. cracks in walls, exposed foundation walls, bowing in floors, settling in floors, settled corners, the old marble test, like we talked about before, putting it on one side and it rolls all the way across the house.
It's probably not good.
Usually not a good sign.
We were talking about that. I did a lot of that in Friendly Hills.
Sloped
over in
floors and things like that are something definitely to keep an eye out for.
That makes sense.
Now,
that also makes sense.
When showing homes, obviously homes will settle. And a lot of the times I try to keep my mouth shut, especially, you know, during inspections and whatnot. But inspectors will point out cracks going from the corners of the doors and windows, and they call that settling. Can you elaborate on that?
Like you said, every builder, every walkthrough we've ever been through for new orientation, their same line is, oh, those are settling cracks here and here, and it's normal and every house has them. I'd like to hear a little bit more about that.
What's
myself.
Your take on that? Yeah.
In drywall, you're referring to?
Particularly? Yeah, typically drywall. Yeah, not on. I mean, if it's concrete, then
usually by the door lines and, you know.
Yeah, you have different types of cracks that you see in drywall. You have tape and mud cracks that are just innocent cracks because they either didn't have a thick enough mud layer and tape layer. Tape wasn't attached properly. Mm-hmm. Completely innocent, but might scare some people if they don't know what they're looking
Absolutely.
At. And seam cracks in drywall on the ceiling and in the walls. Maybe they just didn't tape it and it's just a seam crack. Also very innocent. Then you've also got settlement cracks, which could identify minor settlement or significant settlement. Houses have movement, but every crack does not identify you have a gigantic problem.
So that being said, let's just take it one step further, right? If I'm a buyer and I'm walking through a house, how do I identify or potentially identify the difference between a crack that is an issue versus one of those more innocent settling cracks, seam cracks, that kind of thing? Like, what would I look for?
Definitely. So
you
normally,
don't, you call Jason.
Normally in that real estate procedures, you'll have that inspection process with your home inspectors. They know a lot of many things. When it comes to settlement and structural issues, paying that extra money to have a licensed structural engineer with the state of Colorado to come out and assess that property is money well spent.
Yep.
I agree 100%.
Those third-party engineers that aren't tied to any repair companies that can work for you and give you an honest opinion that's in your benefit, it's an absolutely critical part of that
process. Is there a rough cost to that so they understand, like, maybe it's not several thousand dollars just to make sure your structural is good up front?
I mean, it's not cheap, but
it's
still
the cost.
Yeah, it can vary on area. It can vary on size of house. Okay. It can vary on the firm. A lot of times expected costs can be anywhere from probably $700 to $2,000.
Okay.
That's a wide range, but that also is, are you only getting a verbal? Are you getting a written letter? Are you getting repair drawings? Are you getting site visits and compliance letters?
Interesting.
There's a lot of different factors that go into that cost. Making sure that you interview, just like you would a real estate agent or a client, interview those engineers. Make sure it's a good fit for you. Make sure it's somebody that fits well with your needs, your desires, and your wants.
You have engineers that you know that you refer?
Absolutely. We've been around long enough that we know the good people that, and the other people that we haven't met yet. I'm looking to add on to our team, but we have a list of guys that we trust their product, we trust their client experience, and we know that they're going to do a really good job.
Yeah, and I think that's important because as a buyer, right, a lot of people, and we saw this, you know, coming out of COVID with like wave inspections and people just, hey, I want to buy the house. I want to do this. Yep. I need it.
Quite a bit scary.
It's scary, right? And I think this is where the partnership portion for me means a lot because as a buyer, right, like it is your obligation to do your due diligence. And a lot of people just assume, hey, the due diligence is I want to do an inspection and I want to walk the house to show it. I want to walk the house before we close and that's it. You guys have opportunity, and with us as realtors, we've got partnerships that you can utilize. Because if you do walk through a house, and let's say you do see some of these cracks, you know, I just personally, I usually look at horizontal cracking as kind of like that's a big no-no. Vertical cracks normally run through the seams. Horizontal cracks, if you see those, you start to, there's something going on here. Don't be afraid to ask, hey, do you have somebody that we can use to come out and take a second look at this? Because at the end of the day, if you're buying a house, whether it's for 2 years or 30 years or 50 years, you want to make sure that what you're buying is worth the massive amount of money. And in Colorado, on average, $500,000 or more, right? On a home. So people like Jason, his company, don't be afraid to ask and say, hey, maybe it does cost $1,000. Yeah. Okay. Well, if it costs you $1,000 now versus, you know, a cost
of
$20,000-$30,000 to repair an entire foundation.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a good ROI.
It's kind of like the sewer line scope, right?
Yes.
It's going to cost you an extra $150.
But you got to do it.
But that's peace of mind.
Yeah.
You know you have a functioning sewer.
Yeah.
Because if it's at the tap, it's going to be, I've seen them as expensive as like $40,000.
Yep.
You know, it's peace of mind. Same with the foundation. Now, if you're a seller and you're going to list a home and you have questions, maybe call Jason, say, hey, can you come take a look at this? Is this something that I need to fix? Because we were also talking about this earlier. Getting it done prior to listing
is
going to save you a ton of headaches and money because they're going to beat you up on inspection or not even close.
Yeah, Jordan, what have you seen from listing a house that maybe didn't do those preventative measures? What has happened?
You know, there's always been that question, like, should you tell your clients to pre-inspect a home or do certain things in advance before listing? And the argument I always heard was essentially, like, if you don't know, then you don't have to disclose,
right,
which I completely think is the wrong way of doing business. I'm about being very direct and
transparent.
Disclosure, right? Disclosure, and ignorance isn't going to hold up in court.
And, I've always been the mindset of, like, if you understand something, you can do something about it. That being said, if you have any incline or if you know neighbors who maybe have had some issues with maybe structural or anything of the sort, I 100% always will recommend and advise my clients, you need to get these things checked. That way we can build that leverage within our listing presentation. Instead, we're just waiting for them to give us a contract and they're going to hit us with the full-blown like $40,000 repair when potentially it could be a $2,000 repair job.
Well, and I think that's a great point.
Take control.
Yeah.
Before, or not even advance. Closing at all.
Or not people, even closing at all.
Right. Run from
you issues. Could have your moving plan set and then the next day they bail out because you didn't know. Well, you could have known if you did or had the right agent advising you on these certain things, because it's very, very important to a deal today. People aren't buying houses that have issues like that, that have major ticket items. They want things that are complete and they want to know what they're buying. So the more disclosures I've provided or my clients provided has always been a better thing.
Well, at the end of the day, I think, and Jason, you can back me up on this in your experience, but structural issues are going to show up during a transaction in one way, shape, or form, right? Whether it's the buyer saying something, whether it's the inspection report saying something. And to Jordan's point, having that, you know, if you suspect there may be something going on before you list your house, to have somebody come out and tell you, let's say, for example, you know, we have Jason come out, he refers an engineer, they say, hey, here's what the issue is, here's what the cost is gonna be to repair it, right?
Exactly.
Well, now, in my head as a seller, I'm actually putting myself in a better negotiating standpoint.
Yes.
Because as we talked about earlier, if people see, let's say it's a $15,000 fix, right? Yes, that's a big number, but you're looking at selling your house. If you as a seller know it's a $15,000 fix and you've got the paperwork from a structural engineer saying, hey, this is what it is, and you go to the negotiation table when you're in a contract, they can't turn around and say, hey, we're gonna ask for $30,000 in concessions. Because you can go, no, this is what it's gonna cost.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right?
Being proactive.
Yeah, versus if you don't, and they say, oh, we want $30,000, and the seller panics because they need to sell their house. Now, all of a sudden, you just lost an extra $15,000 in negotiating power because you didn't take the time or the effort or spend the money on getting it fixed or at least looked at before.
And at this point, you're already well into the contract.
Exactly.
You are on dates and deadlines. You have time frames you have to hit.
And people get skittish.
You may not have the ability to get someone in there, an expert to get in there before your inspection objection or your resolution is due. I always say get ahead of it, control it, and understand it so you can have more leverage. The more you tell your agent, the better we can do, truly.
Speaking of skittish, and again, I'd like to know your stance. I've had buyers just run from a house when it's had foundation repairs. How solid is a house after repair? Should people run from a house that's been repaired? How likely is it for the repair to be needed again?
Good question.
that was a multi-layered question.
Yeah, very layered.
I like to layer.
Well, I can tell you this from experience. When designed professionally, when executed professionally by a company that knows what they're doing, you don't get callbacks. When you take your time, you do it precise, you do it the way it was designed, and you make sure that it's in the client's best interest, you never have a problem. It's when people try to cut corners It's when people try to divert from plans. That's when you start getting issues and callbacks and problems. So as long as you are doing that due diligence, you're being proactive in the process. Same like interviewing engineers. Interview your foundation repair options.
Mm-hmm.
There's good companies. There's okay companies. There's good fit companies. There's bad fit companies. Making sure you find somebody that suits your needs and has your best interest at heart, not their pocketbook. Those are the people you want
to
work with.
That's hard to find.
So what are, we can take this from a buyer standpoint and a seller standpoint, just to kind of, like you said, peel back the veil. It's really not that scary. What are some of the, in Colorado specifically, some of the more common repairs that you have seen throughout your career in Colorado? And what are some, I don't want to put you on the spot and say, what do this cost? Because I know it varies.
Yeah.
But give us some of the more common repairs you've seen and associated estimated costs that people would reasonably expect to pay to make those repairs.
Absolutely. I mean, we've done so many repairs.
Yeah.
Anything from just simple crack epoxy injection, just crack sealing and repairing, carbon fiber straps, just to tie sides of the wall back together, reinforcing, to helical piers because of settlement, to tie backs, counterforts, plate anchors because of walls moving laterally, horizontally. They vary. You can have costs that range from $2,000 up to $60,000, depending upon scope. New construction, we do it helical piers on additions to help prevent differential movement. We've done a lot of that kind of different stuff. So new construction, repairs, new houses. We've done whole houses on helical piers as well. But crack repair, you could expect anywhere from probably $1,500 to $4,000 is a safe range.
Okay.
And that's to epoxy inject those cracks. Making sure that there's not water migration, no more chance of oxidization of the rebar. That's all very important to make sure you take care of that foundation wall and prevent that thing from wanting to open up anymore. Carbon fiber straps, usually you're looking at about $700 to $850 a strap. When it comes to carbon fiber straps and helical piers, structural engineers.
Yeah.
Get them involved, have a plan so we know where to put them, how many of them to put. That way it's designed based on the live load, dead loads of the house and everything for your best
interest.
What
does that look like, the carbon fiber straps? I've never seen that. That sounds fancy. I mean,
yeah, just like carbon fiber on a car.
Does it make your house faster?
Yeah, it's just like carbon fiber on a car.
Does Paul Walker get contracted to do it?
So all it does is it's either bidirectional or unidirectional carbon fiber strap, and it helps reinforce and strengthen the wall. So if you have a crack, normally you'll have an A side and a B side of the wall where the crack is separating. That ties those sections back together. Okay. Similar to a crack stitch, just like a stitch in a wound, a crack stitch brings those pieces back together.
So it's like a suture.
Exactly.
And once those are in, I would assume that, I mean, because it's now carbon fiber reinforced, you wouldn't expect to see any more movement unless you're in California on a fault line. Right?
It should not, assuming drainage is properly executed.
Okay.
No matter
you
what
can't be held
you
liable
do
if they don't fix the problem as
right
well.
The root cause.
It's just going to keep on doing it.
Right.
If you don't drain, away from your home.
You got to fix the drainage. No matter if you spend $2,000 on repairs or $60,000 on repairs, making sure your drainage and keeping water away, that's your best chance for success. Water will find a way in, and it'll find a way around the repairs that we just completed. So by doing that, your repairs stand a better chance at success. Your house stands a better chance.
So you mentioned helical piers, right? What are those, and what are the scenarios that you guys, because that sounds, as far as
severe.
I understand it, as A, severe, and B, one of the more expensive fixes, I guess, right, from a foundation standpoint. So can you just kind of explain what that is and what scenarios would necessitate you guys or a structural engineer coming in and doing that?
Yeah, a helical pier is just a deep foundation element. It's a type of a deep foundation, just like a caisson that you'd see on new construction houses. Micropiles, same kind of thing. It's just different application, but same use.
Okay.
Helical piers are nice because it's limited access. I can get in within 33-inch wide fence gate. I can excavate, get down next to the house, and put those in. There's no spoils, so you don't have to worry about grout overruns, concrete overruns, making a big mess, sloppy landscape disturbance. You can get in, you can get it out, make it look like we were never there.
Okay.
But the biggest purpose of them is to help get down to load-bearing strata. With the moving soils at subsurface grade, that's why you experience settlement. is your house is settling due to either water migration or settling soils underneath it. And by getting down to that load-bearing strata, that then better secures your foundation from further settlement.
Got it. I actually had the opportunity, so Jason invited me. He's doing a house in Crystal Valley with, I think it was three helical piers. Is that what
four?
You, yep. Four helical piers.
Wait a second. We all live in Crystal Valley. Are you saying that my house is going to collapse?
I was just going to say.
Hold up.
Can you come look at my house?
We'll let Jason talk about where he works most of the time.
I want him to go take a look at my house.
But that being said, it was definitely one of the more older neighborhoods in Crystal Valley.
I live in one of the older neighborhoods in Crystal Valley.
You better call Jason to your house tomorrow. Gonna, yeah.
Fun fact, this was actually Oscar's house. He doesn't know yet. Surprise.
Shit.
Told you we shouldn't have gone out last night.
Right. But yeah, when I got invited there, it was just crazy. Obviously, I've heard the theory and talks and, you know, phone calls with Jason, like, this is how it works, and this is what a helical pier does, and this is what they look like, and this is the material they're made out of. But when you actually see it, it was really impressive. He showed me in the garage, there was a huge separation, and within, I don't know, 20 minutes of just cranking that, I don't know, they were doing their fancy tricks. You could literally see the garage, you know, reattaching and sealing, closing that gap, and then the alignment of the foundation just slowly being measured, and you could see it in real time. I was just thoroughly impressed. God, so thank you.
Sure, wasn't my house, because my garage literally.
Well, yeah. So no, that's a good point, though, Jordan. I'm glad you brought that up.
I know
up.
It's
so,
the flat work, but yeah.
From a real life, you know, example. So what in that specific house? You don't need to give us an address or a name or firstborn, but that specific house, what necessitated the need for helical piers?
Is it an Opal Ridge?
No.
Okay.
No,
it is not.
It's a windflower. Windflower.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So this is a great case study for something like this in the buy sell transaction, even though they aren't listing their home, at least not yet.
Not yet. We're working on that.
This house, due to the location and where it is topography wise, had a lot of water next to that area of the foundation, third car bay garage. Mm-hmm. So that settlement of the foundation occurred, pulling the roofing out slightly away from the remainder of that garage when that foundation settled.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
We came in, we installed.
So was it settling down and
kind of tipping slightly?
And
away.
That's crazy. When we talk older neighborhoods, I think mine is one of the oldest there, and
yeah.
It's 07. So it's not that old.
It's not that old.
It's not that old.
Yeah. Depending upon environmental factors, drainage, doesn't matter the age of the house. I've seen houses in Denver
brand
that
were built
in the 1800s that are perfect. You've seen houses that were built in 2022 that I've done work on.
So basically this house, it was settling and was pulling the roofing away from.
It was settling away from the remainder
from
of, the
the
house.
Of the house.
So we installed helical piers against that foundation. And this was the perfect application. We actually lifted this foundation up to bring it back up.
Yeah, he like put a shelf under it and it was just pumped it up. And it was just crazy to see. Yeah.
What is... Is it similar to like maybe mud jacking and stuff like that? I mean, I don't.
It's mud jacking on steroids.
Okay,
that's a good
mud
way
jacking,
to compare it. Yeah,
polyurethane lifting, compaction grouting. More often than not, that's slabs, which is not a structural component of your home.
Right,
right.
We are grabbing the foundation of this residence, and I've done it on larger residences before, where we've lifted them up about 4 inches.
Dang, that's insane.
And tried to get to a relatively as much as practical level,
and yet somehow the pyramids got built by hand.
Right. I mean.
Like, that's crazy. So how long does that process take?
No.
Like in this example,
that whole job from start of excavation to backfilling compaction took 4 days.
And how much did it cost?
4 days.
4 days.
Wow.
Yep. And that one, you were probably right in the range of about 14 to 20,000.
So we got. I want to.
I mean, 14 to 20,000 lift your whole home.
Well, but so I want to make this point.
Crazy.
So it was a 4 day from excavation to finishing, $14,000 to $20,000. Right. To be said, and it essentially brought the house back together is how I'm understanding it.
Correct.
And it stabilized the foundation. So again, all other factors being controlled, you shouldn't see that issue going forward.
Correct.
Now I'm going to kick it to Jordan. So Jordan, in your professional opinion,
yeah,
as the listing agent, what does that do to the resale value of that house?
Well, let me flip that for a second. So I'll give you an example working with a buyer. This was actually about a year ago to the day. In Littleton, which we've seen a little bit notoriously, a little bit more settling and maybe some soil issues in Littleton, the Benzenite. They
maybe
like
move to a
about
different
all
neighborhood.
Like,
No. When I lived in Littleton, that's my old hood.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of that.
So you saw that all over the place. So that's the number one thing. Like,
Morrison.
People
and
ask me about
Friendly
Littleton.
Hills.
Like, is it going to have Benzenite? Is it going to fall? But regardless, the house was listed as is type of sale. And just so you know, nothing's as is. Everything's negotiable. Although
technically, though, everything is sold.
Everything
as is,
is as is. But you reserve the right to negotiate.
It is as is, but then you negotiate it. So I flipped that a little bit.
It's all right. We have our legal
disclosures.
We've
already gotten sued once. We're not getting sued again.
Where's my compliance guy? This is Jordan Ortega.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'm kidding. Anyhow, it was listed for about 500, sitting on the market, and obviously rates were high, market was down.
Yeah.
And this is the opportunity that it can also provide to some of your buyers, and I'll talk about the selling here in a moment, but he had purchased this for 500. They weren't willing to do any work, and they knowingly knew there was a settlement or some issues with the foundation. So they went into it, they disclosed it, and I told my client, like, they don't want to do anything about it.
Right.
And his first thoughts was, you know, he talked to his dad. You know, the dads are always telling you, like, you see cracks, you just run away.
Yeah.
But I told him to hold on, and I invited his dad with us to come check it out and really give, you know, his own eyes on it and give you my opinion and really show the value of how it actually can benefit them. So end of the story is, they actually bought the house for $500. We had Jason come out. He looked at the whole section, and he basically told me right away, like, you need to get a structural engineer out here. Mm-hmm. We can't truly tell what's going on. So he had one of his partners come over, did a fantastic job, and the whole, like, you know, sealed letter of this is what it is, this is the fix, this is the repair. They stamp it, they provide it to him and his team, and at that point, they can fix everything. Although my client decided, just like a lot of buyers, to take the concessions instead of actually getting the repair done, which I don't always agree with, but his dad owned a construction company, so they had a lot of resources internally. But realistically, the damage was they had, so obviously in Colorado, in the basements, we have floating walls.
Yep.
And that's very important so that we can flex with as we move and settle. Mm-hmm. Well, anyways, these folks probably didn't know better, maybe not from Colorado, but they put drywall all the way down past the floating wall. So at that point, it stopped the flexing process, which then caused the heaving. So the ground started pushing up, and then you had a little gap going down on both sides with a center piece that was a little bit higher. Anyways, all they had to do was cut the drywall about 4 inches down from the bottom, let it breathe and flex again, and then they had to put about $5,000 of repairs. That home today will sell for $700,000 in a heartbeat. It's on a quarter acre. It's gorgeous. They put a whole living set up in the basement now that they got it fixed. They call me every day and say how thrilled they were that didn't scare them away.
Yep.
And they won, and they think they won. And I know they won. They had $200,000 of equity within 12 months. Name a job you can do that.
Well, and all that you did was you partnered with Jason.
And again.
Utilized his network.
Exactly. I don't pretend to be the expert, but keep the right people in place. Buyer's mind.
So in the scenario with the house in Crystal Valley, just going back to the seller standpoint, if they were to list that house, what is that $14,000 to $20,000? Because again, $20,000 seems like a lot.
Yeah.
But if you're looking at selling your house, what is that from an ROI standpoint? Like, what is your expectation on where you can list that house once that stuff is repaired and why?
Gotcha. So I don't have a great percentage on that, but I can tell you that house is going to list on the market with extreme confidence that if you can say that you're structurally more sound than anything around you and have proof to back that up, I would easily give you another $25,000
or more, at least, on the
list price.
I think better worded would be the marketability of the home would be expected not to sell if you didn't get fixed it would be a tough sale. You fix it or you put that out there that it's going to cost so much, marketability just goes up.
Your buyer pool expands, the amount that you can sell the house for is going to increase.
Now let me ask you a question, you know, coming from a buyer's standpoint or a seller's standpoint with real estate, does your company either provide forms of financing or would you wait for closing to get paid?
Good question.
Just because, I mean, a lot of these sellers don't have, you know, $15,000 out of pocket to pay you up front.
Right.
But they'll have $80,000 in equity and then you'll take the chunk and take it. Do you work with the clients that way?
So normally I don't do financing, because it's a good way for people to get in trouble financially. I prefer to not do that. I have no problem waiting until closing to do work with people. I've done that many, many times for many different scopes, crack repairs, carbon fiber straps, occasional helical pairing of a corner, stuff like that.
Sure.
I like the real estate transaction process because I want people to understand what's going on and feel comfortable that they're not getting into something that they don't feel safe.
Sure.
So by working through that closing process and working with the allocation of the funds through the title companies and things like that, no problem. We've been paid out by title companies.
And the way it works for our listeners is when we go into contract, either Jason's company comes in, and we've never worked with him, I'm using him as an example, would come in, do the work because it's an inspection item, and then the equity of your home is now going to be tapped into to pay him. The title company will not, you know, transfer title or do anything until that's settled. So he'll get a check at closing out of the settlement statement or wire, however you like. Because at the end of the day, if you don't close or don't get, you know, the funds don't reach his pocket, he could put a mechanical lien on your
home. Well, so that, I was going to ask. I was going to play double
So it's, it, he's backed, but yeah, I was gonna play a lot of contractors won't do that work.
And I don't know. This probably, we've all had listings that have been sitting for ever right now.
167 days, actually.
So
hey, sounds like
I'm at 90.
French drains here.
on a couple of mine. But no, so my question is then, you know, let's say you do work with a title company and it is a large repair and you guys are waiting for close to get those funds. What happens if for some reason that home doesn't end up selling?
Thankfully, I haven't run into that.
I know. The only reason I bring it up.
That's a great question.
That's like a worst nightmare. Right.
Yeah.
Well, because right now, in all honesty, we are seeing, like I've pulled two listings in the last 6 months because they just were not, it didn't matter what price drop we did. It didn't matter.
Yep.
Didn't sell. So do you guys
have. But at the same time, from a real estate transactional standpoint, I won't have a contractor work on the contract or on the house until there's a contract on the home. So you're not going to put those repairs in while you're listed. It's just going to be pending either inspection.
I know. I'm saying. So in
that's
general,
how you would avoid that. But yeah, I mean,
right.
Yeah.
They lose their job 2 days before closing.
Right.
And they back
so
out.
What is that? You know what's the rest?
I mean, like, Guido.
They can't get
normally a great way to hedge your bet on that kind of situation is we will come to an agreement and then the work isn't executed until closing is confirmed.
Okay.
So between that gray area of them moving in, you moving out after contract and closing has proceeded successfully.
Okay.
Then
so you have to have closing and funds in hand before you'll do the work. So
not always. Not funds, in hand.
So
he's just saying a closing date confirmed.
Like right now I have a sewer line being replaced, but my guy's not going out there until 2 days prior to closing.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So then
same deal.
He'll get it done.
Okay.
And he knows that we're closing. I mean, 2 days still, you know, that's.
I know it's a hard question.
It could
question,
happen.
But
it could
like
happen.
Said,
I've seen deals fall apart the day of closing.
But you got to assume the best.
But you got to hedge your bets.
Dude, I've had one listing that has been under contract 4 times.
Yeah.
Okay? And has failed every single time.
My town home.
So it's an important thing.
Charm,
and that's the only reason I wanted to ask. Because
we see both extremes.
It is very good to know that either as a seller or a buyer, you know that the work is going to get done. And it doesn't have to be necessarily. Like worried about until close.
So. We've had some transactions where the contract has fallen through.
Yeah.
We don't complete the work yet until that is through closing.
Awesome. Yeah.
Both parties agree to everything and then you're on your way.
All right. Perfect. All right. So.
Is a great thing because a lot of people will not, they're scared. I don't want to call, you know, structural engineer. It's a deal breaker.
No,
but to hear that, hey, you know what? You have equity in your home, which most people should have.
Right.
Get it taken care of. Your house is now solid, you could sell it, and you have that peace of mind.
All right, so last question before we start to wrap up. It's been super, like, so much. I've learned so much right now. Helical piers are just...
carbon fiber on my house. I just want carbon fiber on my house.
The fact that you can wrap your house in carbon fiber and this man can lift the house 4 inches is just insane to me.
Yeah. I could educate you about how helical piers started, but that's another podcast.
I was going to say, that would be like a whole, we need another bottle.
Yeah.
But let me ask you this, Jason. So we obviously...
So let me ask, how were the pyramids made then? I mean,
so we know Colorado is huge as far as out-of-state people coming into Colorado. Why? And you can kind of, as succinctly as you could... Why do we see so many foundation issues in Colorado specifically?
Soil composition.
Okay, so talk us through what that means. Like if I'm somebody that's moving out of state, right, and I'm moving from like, I don't know, Kansas, where either you don't have basements or you do, but nothing moves, like, and I'm coming in first time in Colorado, why is that? And is it as scary as it sounds?
It's not scary, and it happens everywhere.
Okay.
There's foundation repair companies in Nebraska, yep. Kansas, Missouri, Florida, Virginia, Texas, New Mexico, Arizona, California, Utah. They're everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
They're there for a reason, because it happens everywhere.
Okay.
This is not the only place this has happened, and it's not the only place that it will happen in the future. As long as you do your due diligence, like we talked about before, you embrace that preventative maintenance, and you operate by reaching out to people who have your best interest at heart, all this can be resolved.
Okay.
And making sure you don't delay it because you don't want to think about it,
right,
and you attack it immediately, can save you a lot of money.
So awesome. The Colorado soils in specific, though, how do they vary versus, you know, say different, you know, states? Like, are we known for more soft soils, clay soil? What's different about that?
Colorado is unique because it's got different soils in which part of Colorado you're in.
Interesting. So you
have Watkins, all out east. Parker, it's Hugo. Very sandy. Once you go towards west, Lakewood, Kincarroll, Arvada, Thornton, Middleton. All up in that range, you've got claystones. You've got sandstones down in Castle Rock and Castle Pines. So your soil compositions vary. And with that, they bring different interactions on how houses react. So that's the big thing, is just making sure you have those structural engineers familiar with this area, who can educate you on what your house is doing. Is it heaving? Is it settling? Is it a slab? Is it actually the foundation? So you can address that problem efficiently.
I mean, I think that, you know, if anybody's watched Dumb and Dumber, right? And they think they're driving to Colorado, and they don't see any mountains, and they say, that John Denver is full of shit, right? People don't understand, when you have 14,000 feet high mountains being uplifted from nothing, it shifts everything in the entire state, right? We're talking about moving a house 4 inches.
Yeah.
Not mountains being made from tectonic plates shifting.
Plate tectonics.
You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, you're gonna see it all the time.
Right.
So
absolutely.
That makes sense, right? So it's not scary. And if you guys see it, the whole point is talk to somebody that knows what the fuck they're doing.
Reach out.
Pardon my language, but reach out.
I mean, what
out.
About, I know the topography in the mountains is ridiculously different from here in town.
Yep.
Does that figure in cost as well?
It can. It absolutely can. You've got a lot of rock up there.
Yeah.
So installation, access, due to slope, everything can influence cost.
Sweet.
I've had somebody reach out to me up in Granby, so I need to look at her house as well, over there by Winter Park. Everything has Granby. A different niche and quirk.
So you're
to
everywhere.
It. I go everywhere in Colorado.
Awesome. Now, you're like me. I mean, we talk east. I've sold in Hugo. I don't know if you know where that is.
Yep.
It's over by Lyman. These guys give me crap. I've sold, I think, 50% of that city's. I sold two houses down there.
So 50%.
There's
of
like
the city.
10.
There's
Grand Junction to Cheyenne to Pueblo, all over the place.
Awesome. That's
we've,
good to know.
We've done parachute facilities in Watkins. We've done all sorts of things.
Sweet.
Okay.
Awesome, guys. Well, hey, we're going to wrap it up a little bit here.
Before we go, you are now my guy.
There it is.
I don't have a foundation.
He doesn't have a guy. Now
and
guy.
I lost, I had this old timer that would do my foundation certifications, and I think I don't mean to sound morbid, but he might have died.
He might not be alive.
I don't know.
Anymore.
He was old, so
you may need to get Jason over to your house.
A helical pier may have fallen on him in a very tragic.
He's not
accident.
Around anymore. He stopped taking my calls, so I think he either retired or
no. He is the helical old. He's holding a house up right now.
He's old.
All right, so for you gentlemen,
yes, sir.
What we like to do is we are going to move into what's called our one rock takeaway.
Okay.
And the one rock takeaway is essentially, what is your biggest, you know, point that you want to make sure viewers and listeners pay attention to based on the conversation that we had. We suck at it, but we want to make it as succinct and compact as possible.
Yeah.
And since you guys are brand new, Oscar, I'm going to let you go first so they kind of have an idea of what we do. But essentially, we want to make sure, let's wrap everything up and say, hey, this is the thing that I learned about or that's most important.
You know, as well as in everything we talk about, it's having the right context. And I don't have a structural engineer or a structural company. And it's always comes up in the podcast, and I know this podcast is what it's for, is honesty.
Yep.
Honesty to the consumer.
Cool.
That's mine.
Mine is, it sounds scary, but it's not scary. And the knowledge is power. So it is very, very important that you guys, if you have questions and you see something when you're either about to list your house, you're going to buy your house, talk to your realtor, hopefully us. Right. If not, talk to your realtor and have them give you people that you can interview to come out and give you their honest professional opinion. Mm-hmm. And then you can make that decision going forward. Jordan?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it really boils down to the education piece. It's not something that we should actually run away from. We should educate ourselves and get in front of it and use it as your leverage instead of, you know, waiting till the ticking time bomb happens and you're kind of SOL. Like, that's the wrong attitude. To win, get ahead of it, educate yourself, and know what you're dealing with.
Yep. I like it because it might be your dream home.
Yeah, absolutely. And it should not be a reason not to get that home. Yep. Right, everything, Jason, can be fixed.
What's the thing you want people to take away?
Operation with ethics and morals. It is not about what you know. It is about who you know.
Yep.
And reinforcing and relying on those connections that you can trust will operate in ethics and morals. Nothing's impossible.
Love it. Awesome. Well, I've learned a lot. And I'm also glad that we're tasting this whiskey.
No, this was a great episode because I needed a connection like this.
Yeah, no, this is amazing.
That's what we're here for, right?
Absolutely.
So now comes the nitty gritty.
Okay.
Everybody's been waiting. We want to know what we are rating this Whistle Pig.
Okay.
On a scale of 1 rock to 10 rocks. And just as a reminder, 1 rock is the best, 10 rocks is the worst. Mm-hmm. Reason being, mm-hmm. the worse the whiskey, the more ice you need to water it down. We go on a scale of 1 to 10. Oscar and I and Charlie have been doing this for 70 goddamn episodes. So
75.
We're a little bit pickier. So I'm going to let you gentlemen start and tell me what you guys think. Jordan, what's your rating on Whistle Pig Piggyback 6-year single barrel?
Okay, so Piggyback, usually Whistle Pig's very rye heavy, mm-hmm. very, you know, spices, this and that. I definitely didn't get that. I would never use this as like a old fashioned per se. I think it drinks great neat. I think that gin gives it a nice touch with the gin aged barrel. It's pretty smooth, actually. I thought it was going to be a little bit more like funky. I don't know.
Sure.
I don't know.
I agree.
Exactly. Because when you hear gin with bourbon, like
it's
I'm
weird.
A weeded bourbon
weird,
type of guy.
Yeah, it's a weird.
I was thoroughly surprised and happy. I would have to give this probably a 7.
Okay.
Wow.
No, sorry. One's the best.
Yes. One's the best.
I apologize.
Seven. I was bad. Like, wow, we've only had a few seconds. I apologize. This is trash.
I apologize.
This is garbage.
If you flip that, I would give this a 3. That's what
I'm very impressed that it sucks.
I was impressed with this bourbon, but it was fucking garbage. I'm done.
Dude, it sucks.
Pour it out.
All right, so we got a 3.
I forgot the number
Jason,
metric
what about
system
you?
Around here.
I thought it was pretty good.
Okay.
I'm more of an Islay Scotch guy, so it's a different profile.
It is a,
that I'm a huge fan of. I'm a campfire kind of flavor. Yep. Overall, the smoothness of it, the bite of it, how it's minimal, and the overall profile, I would probably be at about a 3, 3.5.
Okay.
It's pretty good.
All right. Oscar, what's your
First
crazy
of all,
palate think?
Doing it in a gin barrel should be blasphemy. Because gin and vodka almost took out bourbon. Stupid bond effect. But anyway, I'll let that slide. It opened up nicely. It was sweeter on the sweeter side for the rise. Like I said, I don't know Whistle Pig that well, and I really enjoyed most of the Whistle Pigs that I have tasted. This one was no exception. I'm going to go with the 3. I know we always say that rye should have their own category. This was just all around great bottle. It was a solid 3.
Yeah.
I'm going to go, you know, it opened up, but I almost feel like it lost some complexity.
Yeah.
As it stayed open.
It, you know, the bite is usually my part of my profile. And
it goes away kind of
It goes away right. and it kind of sweetens up. Making an old fashioned would probably be too sweet. I
agreed.
Agree.
Mm-hmm. Now.
Yeah. Right now.
Now, when we first cracked it, it's a different story, right? My concern, not my concern, I think this would be a great, we always talk about like how would this appeal to like a beginner bourbon drinker? And a lot of beginner bourbon drinkers will shy away from rye because they're very spice forward.
Yes.
They're a little bit.
Yes.
There's a lot.
They're a little
they,
harsher.
They come
like, they're like the IPAs.
I think this would be
a good
entrance to a rye.
Yeah.
Especially on like a single rock.
Yep.
Right. To water that down. Because initially it was much harsher.
Right.
But now, an hour in or 55 minutes in, it's opened up and the chocolate that Charlie pointed out has really started to kind of take over that palate.
Definitely.
And the rye portion of it has kind of simmered mm-hmm. a little bit. So I think it'd be a great beginner rye. I'm trying to think of the other ryes we put at like a 3, and I don't think I can put it there. And only because I think it gained sweetness, but I think it mellowed to the point where it lost complexity. So I think I'm closer to like a 4.5.
But it was very unique for being
very
a rye.
Unique.
Considering
very unique.
A rye, it's very unique, which is cool. I thought that was nice.
And that's why I gave it a good, it's the drinkability.
It's a great drinker.
It was
I
a
just,
great surprise.
I was hoping that, we always talk about complexity. I like it when bourbons kind of evolutionize as you drink it.
Sure,
think this one kind of went the opposite way, but it became an easier drinker, which is great. I'm just a snob. This man doesn't even remember tasting 20-year Pappy last night, so his opinion means nothing.
Right now, my opinion means dirt.
But yeah, so I'm gonna go 4.5.
Question: do you think if you're not a big fan of gin, would you still enjoy that bottle?
I don't know, dude.
I get a heavy gin on the nose.
The nose threw me off.
I smell that gin pretty heavily up front.
I'm gonna kick it to the audience real quick, and by audience, I mean Charlie. What do you think?
Yeah, come over.
Come on, buddy. Come on, buddy.
What's up, everybody? I am with Jameson on it. I think that this one kind of died out a little bit on its complexity over time. At first, great complexity, great breakdown of different flavors. But as it aged, as it stayed open, it definitely lost its complexity. So I'm with Jameson. I think I'm going to do like a 4.3, 4.4.
Hell yeah.
I'll re-rate it if I can
get
a cost
on
it.
Nope.
The cost.
What is the cost? $25 a pour.
Okay.
Five.
Not bad for pour. Do we know what the bottle retails for?
I'd imagine 89
I think it's like
bucks.
$89.
If it's over
that's what I would put it at.
$80.
It's under 100.
It's a five.
It's under 100.
If
it's
like 60 to
Can I go back
bucks,
to my seven rating?
Three
no,
grand.
I'm just kidding. I actually enjoyed it.
No, it's a good bottle. I like it.
I think it's
I like
it.
Decent.
It is good. Yeah. It's an easy drinker.
Yeah, I'll drink anything.
I'm not going to pull this bottle out when I'm like Christmas Day,
yes.
fireplace rolling. Mm-hmm. That's
right.
Not happening.
That's not happening.
But it is a pretty decent.
I mean, if I'm at the Catalina Wine Festival.
That's right.
There you go. Awesome, gentlemen. Well, hey.
Thank you.
Thank you guys for coming on.
Thank you.
Jordan, I'm glad it's only taken me 2.5 years to get you on this podcast. So
I'm
glad you finally were like, hey, I'd like to be on the podcast. Jason, your information today was absolutely fantastic. And I think we could probably do like a 3-hour long form podcast.
Oh,
we could,
yeah, there's yeah. more.
Just
I want
part
to
two,
we
could part roll. Three.
Yeah, roll. just about structural engineering. So
gotta come back.
I'm excited. We'd love to have you back if you're willing to. I think this is 100%. Phenomenal. Very, very good information. As always, guys. You know, we'll give the contact information for the podcast itself. We are the Mile High Perspective, living in Colorado. You can find us on YouTube. If you want to email us at any point in time, RESOTR at themilehighperspective.com. Let us know what bourbons you want to drink, what questions you guys have. Like and comment. Let us know how you guys think we're doing. If you guys want to reach us directly, phone call or text 720-584-3361. And at the end of the day, the whole idea is to give you guys contacts. So I'm going to start with Jason. Jason, if people have
questions,
how can they get a hold of you? Where can they find you? Give me your website, your email, your phone number.
Yeah.
Let the people know.
We're all over the place. We're on Facebook. We're on Instagram. Best place to find us is 303-471-1155.
Perfect.
That's our office phone number. It goes straight to my cell phone. Always happy to help any way I can. Call me, text me. Let's get that problem fixed.
Yes.
Website to get additional information is rmssco.com.
Beautiful.
Just revamped it. Looks gorgeous.
Awesome.
Cool, man.
And if you guys need another phenomenal realtor contact that I can personally vouch for, and Oscar can personally vouch
for.
I'll
vouch for him. He's a good dude.
Jordan Ortega. Jordan, where can they find you, man? How can they get a hold of you?
Yeah, so my cell is 720-338-8147. I'm, again, with Remax Professionals. I got Facebook, all the, you know, different social medias. Really not going to be that hard to find. Just Google. So, yeah.
True.
Said Google me.
Google me.
The man with the good hair is what I like to call him.
I just cut it all off.
Oscar, what
I'll
about
be back
you, man?
Next year with the better
I don't
hair.
Have hair. Oh.
You don't have hair. That, where can they find you, brother?
Well, I have
Oscar at Oscarrealtor.com. Oscar, the realtor CEO, across the board.
Awesome. And you guys can find me, as always, the Colorado Real Estate Guy, anywhere and everywhere. TikTok, Facebook, Instagram. Basically any social media.
Any Let bourbon bars too.
Any probably. Bourbon bars right. at night after Nuggets a Nuggets game. You know what I mean? We'll be there. But yeah, we'd love to have you guys join us. If you're in town, you want to get a hold of us, come meet us at the Rouge. We'd love to have a pour with you. But until next time, gentlemen, I really appreciate it. Awesome episode.
Thank
cheers.
You.
Cheers.
Cheers. Cheers. Cheers.
Thanks,
appreciate
gentlemen.
You guys having us.
Thank you.
Thank so. You.
Cheers.
Thank you for tuning into this week's episode of Real Estate Served on the Rocks. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and basically anywhere you listen to podcasts. If you'd like to see the video version, subscribe to our YouTube channel at Living in Colorado, The Mile High Perspective. And to stay up to date with all the specials and events going on at the Rouge Wine and Bourbon Bistro, visit their website, therougewinebar.com.